Braised beef and mushroom sauce served over a plate of grits, fluffy biscuits fresh from the oven and brushed with butter, and some peachy keen cobbler to wrap it all up. If your stomach's growling, that's the point. Chef Scotty Scott wants you to explore the wide, varied, and insanely delicious world of soul food in his new cookbook, Fix Me a Plate. It's packed with recipes that will, in the chef's own words, make you want to take a nap after. But first, you've got to master a few techniques. And here to talk us through them all is Chef Scotty Scott himself, joining us from Fort Worth, Texas. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I want to start by asking about how you went from lawyer to personal chef and now cookbook author.
It was the road less traveled, so to speak. I did not recommend people going to law school and incurring the wrath of Sally Mae before going into cooking. But it's just always been a passion of mine. I always loved being around food and being around cooking, and both of my parents were home cooks. And so whenever we had family gatherings, I was always poking around in the kitchen or poking around outside the grill, trying to see where the action was and see how everything was being prepared.
I understand one of your earliest kitchen experiences did not end so well, though.
And, you know, back in the days, you can be left alone. And so I was asked to watch some ham hocks that were simmering on the stove. And I did for about 10 minutes. And then I went and watched some cartoons and fell asleep and was awakened to a smoldering pot of ham hocks that had smoked up the whole house, basically. Fortunately, it was all smoke and no fire, but it was not a good experience to begin with.
Yeah. So what, I imagine you were banned from the kitchen for a time after that, but when did you start to get more involved in actually cooking?
Probably a couple years after that. My father kind of worked odd hours, and my mother was a high school counselor by day, and then she taught night school at night. So I was left to fend for myself for dinner a lot of times, and I tell people peanut butter and jelly got old real fast. Eventually, I started, you know, asking my mother to kind of show me some of her tips and tricks and started cooking a little bit more right before I left for college, which is when I really started kind of diving into it deep, so to speak.
Now, the book, like you say, includes what you call it new school soul food, but it also has some really traditional recipes. I'm curious if there were certain family recipes that you knew you had to include untouched, that you couldn't change these things.
Yeah, you know, there were several in there that, you know, sweet potato pies being the first one that comes to mind. You know, when you're recreating, you know, recipes that have been handed down for generations, that's a big task because, you know, these recipes are tried and true. And so there were definitely some in that I said, you know, these would have to be exactly the way I remember them and the way I grew up eating them and cooking them.
Tell me about that sweet potato pie recipe.
I call it the converter. It converts pumpkin pie eaters into sweet potato pie eaters. It's got a, you know, one little quirk to it, I think, that I've gone back and forth with a couple chefs online about is how you prepare the sweet potatoes. I know most pie recipes call for you to roast them. And so in this recipe, I boil them because I like the delicate flavor of it. I had somebody describe it to me as almost flan-esque because it's very light. It's very easy on the palate, and it just kind of makes you want to go back and get another slice after slice after slice.
Well, give me an example of something that was fun to take new school.
I go to my red beans and rice recipe a lot because you can transform this. You've got a base here that's probably got some good flavor and some good stuff going on. So it starts off as red beans and rice, and then it turns into a red bean hummus. And so you're just taking that big old great pot of red beans with the sausage, the garlic, the onions. You're putting it in a food processor. You're going to brighten it up with a little lemon juice, a little bit of cayenne, and then you're going to just eat it like you would hummus. And so it begins off with this hearty, belly-filling bowl of beans. And then on the backside, it turns into this, you know, delicious kind of light appetizer.
So the recipe that caught my eye that was something different were the pimento cheese hush puppies. So I tried it. Pimento cheese hush puppy number one into the fryer. Number two and number three. I'm gonna do three at a time so I don't crowd them in my pan. and they were really delicious. They were a big hit with my family.
Oh, fantastic. That's what I love to hear.
But I had a hard time. I made them too big. They would look like cat head biscuits instead of little bitty round hush puppies.
They're pretty big. You know, I make them big in that sense just because it's a little bit more difficult the smaller you make to get enough pimento cheese in there. So I tell people, go ahead and just make a big ball and then cut them in half and serve them that way, you know.
You know, there are times where you delve a little bit deeper into the history of particular dishes. I thought about your mother's hot water cornbread, for instance.
So the hot water cornbread, it's funny. My grandmother used to make this all the time. As grandmothers are, they always want to feed you, you know, and she'd always have, you know, fruit and vegetables, as she called them, ready for me and something else. And she'd be frying up some hot water cornbread. Many recipes and dishes overlap different cultures. The first time I was making it, the smell immediately took me to tortillas. And it's basically the same thing. It's warm water and corn in some form or fashion. And so I had to have it in the book because I said, this is something that's simple. It goes back throughout the history of not only soul food, but it kind of overlaps with the Native Americans' influence in soul food. And so it was really close to my heart.
You write about how you could understand how this was a food that both enslaved people and Native Americans would have shared almost, that it was a portable food, right?
Yes, and that was part of it too, is that, you know, how practical is it? If you're making a soup or a gumbo, that's delicious, but you can't always, you know, if you're on the go or if you're working, you need something that's portable. And so in doing my research, I just realized that one of the reasons that cornbread and specifically hot water cornbread was used because it was simple, gave you sustenance, and it was portable.
You're a father now.
Yes.
I'd like to know what food traditions you really want to make sure you pass along to the next Scott generation.
Just gumbo is one of the staples that I tell everybody I love to make. I love the process. I love foods that take a long time to cook. You know, gumbo starts off with scraps, simmering that for hours, and it's going to come out with this delicious, rich broth. And it's going to start off with gumbo, also with a roux. And I like a dark roux, so it's going to be me standing over a stove for about 40 minutes, trying to get it just perfect before it burns, and I have to start all over again. It's turned into a tradition in my house on New Year's Day because I have all day to do it. And so that'd be one of the things I definitely want to pass along. It's just something that you can kind of take some time and make sure it's done right.
Chef Scotty Scott, his new cookbook, Fix Me a Plate, is out now. Thanks again.
Thank you.